fires. Let's hope you don't catch on fire, because that sucks. But if you need any support, let us know, man. We'll see what we can do for you. So you're in Washington State, and there's, oh, fuck, yeah. When I was in Fort Lewis, back in my Army days, I got sent on a couple of details to go fight fucking forest fires and shit. It's bullshit. Let's see what we got here. Okay. I'm checking Odyssey. I'm not seeing blankets on there like he's usually there. Okay. Alrighty. And let's check. Then we got a 5x5 on the Rumble. All right, today we're going to be doing some Army stories and stories in general. I don't know how it happened, but apparently I became a good storyteller. So I think I got the skill from my grandfather. He was a really good storyteller. And I remember having those Sunday dinners with my grandparents, my mom, and my extended family, and my grandfather would tell these stories at the dinner table that were fucking hilarious. The guy was a savage just like me, man. And, you know, and as when I got older, he, you know, he's pretty proud of me, even though I got in a lot of trouble. He would just laugh and go, yeah. Because, you know, he was from Newfoundland, Canada. And he immigrated here when he was like 19 or 20 or some shit. But, you know, this was way back in the day. This is my, you know, grandfather, you know, and who's been long dead. But apparently they were putting in telegraph lines and power lines across the property where he lived. You know, he lived on a farm. Everyone lived on a farm back in the day. And they had left some transformers on the side of the road. And they were there for quite some time, and he finally took them into his garage and hooked them up. And he had the big giant leather gloves and the fucking goggles, and he was like arcing fucking crazy amounts of electricity and fucking everyone's like power up and the radios and shit. That guy was a fucking animal. I guess that's where I get it from. But anyway, dude, we've got Flip the Bunny is running for governor in Alaska. He sent me a PDF in regards to a bill that he has my name on it. I'm honored that you're putting my name there. I truly am. And hopefully we can you know, get some visibility on the shit that's going on with men out there. Because I'm sick and tired of this, the stats of all these people committing suicide, all these men committing suicide for bullshit. Let's see, Calliope, why does it say Monday, Thursday at 5:05 ETS? Oh, that's me, man. Dyslexia. What do you want me to tell you? I fucked up. What do you want me to do? Like, when I set up the Sunday streams, I don't have a second set of eyeballs. So, like, minor shit, like, I just don't see them. And, you know, it is what it is. I said, Calliope, oh, wait, I actually hit something on my phone and got another channel. All right, man. Thank you, Flip the Bunny. And I do have your bunny suit. I don't know if we'll see what's up. I might put that on and drink whiskey and shoot guns. That way I don't nullify any, I can nullify any homo suspicion points I get for wearing the fucking pink bunny suit. You bastard. Okay, so You guys know I wrote a book, a philosophy book. It's more like a book of wisdoms. And you don't have to be one of those guys who like goes and masters in philosophy and does all that bullshit to be an individual who has wisdom. Because when you think about it, all of those books and all that bullshit they study in philosophy and in, you know, whatever, came from a dude who literally lived it, got fucking beat down, and wrote a book about it. That's it. That's it. I see Papa. I was also asked by an Italian dude with a firm that has a Hebrew name that is based in D.C. Might be because of my letter to Trump. I don't know. Yeah, it could be. It could be. So if you guys are, look, man, you guys are awesome. I'm so proud of you guys. You're like my tag along sons, the whole regiment. It's good shit, man. I'm honored to be here. Truly, I am. I've seen some crazy ass shit. We're going to talk about it here. Okay, so this next story is in regards to a platoon sergeant that I had when I was in the 9th Infantry Division. When I first showed up, the original platoon sergeant was a fucking asshole. And he had a philosophy like, if you're a single soldier, you should, you know, living in the barracks, you should be available, you know, whenever you're needed. And for the first like 8 months that I was in the 9th ID, I was either on CQ runner, staff duty runner. And what that is by the phone in every unit, there's somebody there 24/7. And it's usually called charge of quarters. And you have the people during the day doing their thing. And then at night they go home, and then you have CQ, charge of quarters. It's usually it's an E5 or E6. And then you have E1 through E4 as a runner. And they have that at the company level, you have at the battalion level, and then there's another one up at brigade, and I did that one 2 or 3 times. And I was doing it like 2-3 times a month, sometimes more, on the weekends. It was always on the weekends. And, you know, and I didn't know better. I mean, I was a newbie, okay. Then I got put on duty to guard the ammo supply point for a week. I did that 3 times. And you know, and they sent me to driver school to drive a 2.5 and a 5-ton. And then I wound up being whored out to drive for the 247 infantry, our sister battalion, and other companies within 347 infantry that were short drivers. Nobody wanted to be a driver because of this. They worked the dog shit out of you. And thankfully, that platoon sergeant got fucking shit canned. I mean, they found too many people were complaining. It was fucked up. And, you know, it is what it is. Never got an apology. Never got any makeup time for all the fucking weekends. Because I've literally worked every weekend for like 3 or 4 or 5 months straight. Then we got another platoon sergeant, and this guy was different. He was a Vietnam guy. All right. He got drafted and then served a tour in Vietnam, came home, knocked around for a couple of years, and then went back into the army, you know, as a career, and wound up as my platoon sergeant. Great dude. And he and the battalion sergeant major knew each other from their Vietnam days. And I remember we had a family event which is mandatory fun at the American Lake, which is by Fort Lewis, and we're having a family day thing. You know, and we were allowed to have a couple beers. Nobody cared. So I had two beers. This other, you know, other guys were drinking beer. And I was never like a big drinker. Like I would drink and black out, but I didn't like drink all day, every day. It was maybe, you know, once or twice a month I would fucking tie it on. And then I got in this fucking fist fight with this Mexican kid over, I don't even know what. I was just talking, and all of a sudden he said, "What you say?" And boom, he just punches me in the mouth. And next thing you know, he was an amateur boxer, tooled me up pretty good. And I wrapped him up, and then some headbutts. I kneed him in the balls, took him to the ground, and then we started rolling around. And during our scuffle, we knocked. We knocked somebody into the fucking fire. And then we were fucking going at it. We went out in the dock and we knocked, I think, with the battalion commander's wife into the lake. It was a fucking clusterfuck, man. It was. Listen, you have two guys who are like, I think we're 18. I was like 18 by this time. You know, in the best shape of my life, high school athlete. And this other guy was from California, I think Los Angeles, gangbanger, still in really good shape. And we were going 110% fighting. And they finally break us up. And about an hour and a half later, we were standing before the man at battalion. The battalion commander was wearing a Hawaiian shirt, and he still had like the sun shit on his nose. And the sergeant major, you know, his name was, we called him Mung Ho. You know, he was a Hmong from Vietnam, and him and the battalion commander were, you know, served together during the Vietnam War. And they're gonna run us up the fucking flagpole. Like we're gonna get a field grade Article 15. They're gonna, I don't know. It's like 3 months, you know, extra duty. They're going to take money and rank. I didn't have any rank, really. I don't think I had any. I was nothing. Like, I was the dude who takes off his pro mask to see if everything's good to go. I was nothing. And my platoon sergeant, you know, comes walking in. And immediately, you know, he's like, "What's going on here?" And they're like, "Hey, Sergeant Ward, these guys are fighting. Give them Article 15. And they're like, "Well, I mean, this is what they do, right? Is this not an infantry battalion? We're like training people to fight here? We give people beer and then they fight? I mean, is this what we've become here? And this is some bullshit." And I guess he guilted the sergeant major, and the sergeant major was just like, okay. And the battalion commander calmed down a little bit, and then the battalion commander, you know, leaves the office, because this now became NCO business. There's no officer involvement. And you know, my platoon sergeant's like, "Oh, hey, I'll punish him. Don't worry about it." Okay. So this was on a Saturday. Yeah. And we went back to the battalion, put on our PT gear, and he said, "Come down here with your work gloves," which you get like your BDU black leather gloves, and then you have these thicker work gloves for handling barbed wire and shit. And I'm like, "Okay." And on the other side of the parking lot, there were some old telephone poles that had been sitting there for years. I mean, they were just overgrown, half rotten, all fucked up. And he's like, "Yeah, you're going to saw those up." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" Motherfucker comes out with one of those lumberjack fucking, it's like 6 foot long fucking saw with the handles. And he made us, you know, he went out and got sawhorses and shit. Where all this stuff appeared from, I have no fucking clue. No clue at all. And we sawed up these three fucking telephone poles into 2-inch fucking wafers. And we sawed from, I don't know, like up until 7-8 o'clock at night. And we went back to the barracks, got some sleep, came in at, 07-ish, went to chow, came back, and we sawed up these telephone poles the rest of the fucking Sunday. And, you know, halfway through Sunday, like even with the gloves on, I literally had blisters on my hand. My hands were like bleeding through the fucking gloves. Fucking miserable. And you know, you think it's easy, you got two guys sawing, you know, but this is like pressure treated chemical fucking wood, and shoulders, elbows, everything's just fucking smoked. And this, I remember, like there was a small like row of hills that separated our company areas from the battalion, and somewhere around 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday, we saw the sergeant major walk up on the hill, and he smoked. He was always smoking, watching us suffer. You can see him like, and then on Monday, we had these wood burners, and we had to burn in a fucking formal apology on each one of these wooden wafers. And this is the guy I was fighting with, and the whole time we're just laughing like, this is so fucking dumb. Like, why were we fighting? It's, I don't know, man. Fucking stupid. I was drinking. What the usual answer? I was drinking. And then once we got all of the, you know, stuff, you know, basically we burned the apology in there and drilled a hole so it could hang on a nail. And then we went to on-post housing and delivered one to every person that lived on on-post housing. And then the rest were in boxes that were there for a long time. They didn't do anything with them. It was just to punish me or punish us for fighting, which, you know, what are you going to do? Granted, the guy got knocked in a fire, and battalion commander's wife got knocked in the lake. I'm sorry. Things happen. It's a fight. And, that's when I knew this was the real deal. This wasn't like a pencil whipping, I'll write you up kind of platoon sergeant. And I knew that if I stayed in the Army, that was the kind of guy I wanted to be. You know, I wasn't going to be one of these little, you know, dicktards that, you know, I'll write you up. Like, what are you going to do? Roll up the paper and stab me in the eye? Go fuck yourself. Not going to fucking happen. But, you know, and then up until this point, I had put in like two 4187s to go to Ranger school or to the Ranger battalion. And I was working on my third. And he said something to me. He calls me in his office and he's like, so you put in a request, you know, to have half a day off to get an airborne physical. And I'm like, yeah. He goes, this is like, what, your third one? I'm like, I don't know. They didn't take me serious for the, you know, the first two 4187s. Because I did not know at this time that they just threw them away. And then he looks at me and he goes, Papa, you know, I want to give you some advice here. He goes, you need to be really careful what you're standing in line for in this life. Because you just might get it. And I didn't understand it at the time. And, I was like 18, 19 years old. I don't remember. I was just like, this old guy telling me some shit. Yeah. But I never forgot that. And one of the main reasons I have all these stories and I have all this advice and wisdom is I have always, or a majority of the time, been present in the now, not living in the past or daydreaming about the future. I mean, we all do that to an extent, but I didn't spend a lot of time there, and I just paid attention. And you will be surprised at how many goddamn lessons there are that the universe is trying to teach you every single day, and you're not paying attention. So we're going to be talking about stories like this today. You know, where wisdom, some of my wisdom came from, and perhaps it'll open some doors or open your eyes, and you guys can follow in suit, you know, into the future. So, he was the platoon sergeant we had when we deployed forward to the MFO mission, Sinai, Egypt. And again, you know, I got my second Article 15 when I was there. First one was for fighting my team leader, and I lost. That's what he said anyway. And I just got extra duty. So, but anyway, you know, I deployed forward without my protective mask, and they made a big deal out of it. Oh my God! What had happened is my roommate at the time, he and I were not getting along. I believe I punched him in the face a few times. It's army shit. That was back in the day. People fought all the time. He pissed me off. And like, for me to get the violence, like, you really got to go above and beyond, because I'm not that guy. I don't like fight it. I've never been that guy to fight at a drop of hat. And in this particular instances, we were going to be gone. We're leaving on a Tuesday or a Monday. And we had like a three or four day weekend before we were going to leave. And I was hanging out with some chicks doing, you know, I was fucking the shit. This chick was hot as fuck. It was a great time. I come back and my boots were filled with beer. And I said, "Hey man, who fucking did this? This is fucked up." You know? And he made some stupid joke. I'm like, okay. You think it's funny? How funny is it now? Well, because of that interaction, he kicked my pro mask under my bed, and I didn't see it. I packed up, took my A and B bag down, had them palletized, and lo and behold, I land in Egypt, and we're doing our equipment inspection, and I don't have my protective mask. I had a bunch of comic books. Yeah, a bunch of useless bullshit. And they fucking fucked me up, man. And listen, okay. Because I've been that guy. You know, I've been the old NCO looking at the young guy, you know. And I was just young and stupid. And they knew it. They could have easily, you know, gave me field grade Article 15. Kicked a field goal with my career and fucked me up three ways to Sunday. And I got a company grade Article 15 with, I think I got 20 days of extra duty, which basically after dinner, you just show up at the first sergeant's office and you work or do whatever he wants or whatever until, you know, he's done. And for the 20 days, I filled sandbags, dug holes, and I built a gazebo. It's probably gone now. Who knows? And, yeah. And I would never forget that man. He had like two teeth in his fucking head. Ugly, ugly son of a bitch. But he had a picture of himself and on the wall over his desk when he was in Vietnam. And you could just see it in his eyes. That, you know, those dull eyes, those fucking dead fucking, you know, been there, done that eyeballs, you know. And they were the same. Like, you literally look at the picture of him when he was like 19. And you can see it in his eyes. I mean, he just finished a tour in Vietnam. And then you look at him at the desk. It's same fucking just the deadpan fucking eyeballs. You know, I don't think I can. I mean, I can do it. I can have that look, but I got to be really pissed. But that dude, man. And I remember we came back and I made that big fucking stink over the 4187s that got shit canned. And, you know, I got yelled at a few times, and he was always there. He was my platoon sergeant defending me. I mean, I remember I was just getting read the riot act by the battalion commander and the sergeant major for not following the chain of command and blah, 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 blah. And people were getting fucking nuked over this one. And my platoon sergeant the entire time is like, hey, it's not his fault. He kept copies. He followed the rules. He did what he's supposed to do, and the people, the NCOIC, which is the sergeant in charge of your pack, they did all the paperwork, threw his paperwork away. That's the only explanation. And now we're getting mad at this guy because, you know, he wants to do bigger and better things, and he called everyone out, and, you know, people are getting fucked up. And it was him and Sergeant Major Kidd, who later became Command Sergeant Major of the Army, Kidd. Because when I first came in, one of my shit details I got put on, I was his driver for like 2 or 3 weeks. So, you know, I'd go sign out a GSA car or van, and I would literally be in front of the I Corps headquarters right after PT. So I'd have to do PT, shower, eat, run my ass over there, be in the vehicle, and he went everywhere. He went to all of the different units, did all these surprise inspections, meet and greets, grip and grins, whatever you want to call it. And he was very professional until he got in the car. And dude, that Vietnam era fucking man, that man could swear and insult like a with the best of them. I laughed my fucking balls off at some of the shit this dude said. And he remembered my name, Pop. It's not that hard. So when I kicked off that that huge IG fucking issue, and my name came up at the, you know, highest level on Fort Lewis. And he's literally like right next to the Fort Lewis commander. And he's like, I know that guy, that Pop guy. He was my driver, you know, like last year. What the fuck? He's looking at it. And now this is just rumor. I was not in the room. So there were some lieutenants and captains that, you know, I heard the rumor from through my commander and my lieutenant. And the command sergeant major is like looking at the fucking IG. He's like, well, God must be a ranger. And what the fuck? 3 4 8 7s? Okay. Literally, he looks up at this one lieutenant. He goes, so while you're going to airborne school? No, you're not. No, you're not. He literally verbally told this lieutenant, fuck your airborne school slot. We're taking that and we're giving it to this guy. That's how I got to airborne school. And it made all the fucking difference, man. And I'm sure Command Sergeant Major Kidd is dead by now, but he was a really good motherfucker. And I was honored to drive for that guy. And again, those old combat dudes, they just move different. Like the world just didn't really affect them the same. And I didn't understand that until I went to combat myself. It's a whole different animal. It changes you. Like, just imagine. So there's a lot of civilians out here, a couple vets, but let's go through this real quick. I want you to imagine this. All right. You got up today, shit, showered and shaved, stuffed your pie hole, got in your car, followed 150 different traffic rules and regulations. You stopped at the right stop, you know, signs, you yielded right away, left turns, green light, yellow light, red light, you know, merge, express lane, get off at this ramp. I mean, literally, you follow hundreds of instructions, laws, and rules every single day. It's instinctual. It's instinctive. You don't even notice it. You're just so used to it. Now imagine you get plucked out of that world, dropped into another country where none of that shit exists, and it is kill or be killed. You're hunting them and they're hunting you. Sounds scary, and it is in the beginning. But after a while, you learn the rules. You understand the game. Because it is a game. It's a game of death. It's a game for the ultimate prize, which is life. But it is a game. It's like playing tag at a distance, except the other guy goes to sleep forever. And once you've done that, you think like that, you're not going back to baseline. It's just not going to happen. And you move through the world differently. And you can tell. Let's check some of these comments. Let me know. Am I off base here? Do you guys like these? WH Hammer, Harrison 94, that's a waste of beer. Beat his ass for that. Ah, I punched him in the face twice. He wasn't a good fighter. But, you know, it is what it is. Let's see, just wasting. Okay. Okay, we got Roman Life. Did we see Edmund 209 in here? I haven't seen him in a while. Is he doing okay? We got Susie McCarley here. All right, Susie. All right, we got Bigot 62. Most fire around here go northeast due to the wind, and one south of me seems mostly contained. Wildfires are a crazy fucking thing, man. MX Stilgar here. All right, there we go. Thank you for showing up. We got Rule Man Life. Okay, let's see. All right, we're good. Ooh, Tulag. Pop used to call those shark eyes. Well, if you see Edmund Calipi, let him know I was asking about him. The guy's on a weight loss journey. He's doing a lot of stuff that needs somebody to, you know, cheer him on. Okay, the next one I'm going to talk about here, and I should have paid attention to this one, but I've seen this train wreck happen over and over again, and it's a train wreck in slow motion. Like, you can hear the wheels squeaking, you can see the sparks of the train tracks, you know, heating up as the locomotive tries to stop. And somebody's on the tracks. You know they're going to get fucked up, and it's probably not going to be good, but you just can't turn away. You're like, I have to watch this shit. All right. And this next one is called I Can Fix Her. All right. The women of today are so fucked up that 2/3 of all of the men under the age of, I think, 32 are not dating, not interested in dating, not getting married. They're done. And I think that has something to do with the internet. And These dirty ass women and their fucking tricks are now on full display for everyone to see, and they're admitting it themselves, which in my time, in my teens and 20s, I mean, women did this kind of shit from time to time, or that maybe they did it all the time and we just didn't know. But, you know, they're a raging fucking whores. And that was in like the late 80s, early 90s. And it's only gotten worse. Raging whores. And, you know, when I came back from the, you know, MFO mission, we lost a bunch of NCOs. So I was filling in for a team sergeant's position. That's how I came. That's how I met Riggs, Mr. VD man, and all the other shit. All right. Cause they were trying to promote me to, they wanted to make me a corporal and then promote me to E5. But if I did that, I couldn't go to the Ranger battalion. So I turned that down. So I've been dealing with dudes. Out of my 33 years, 31 of it, I have been in leadership positions in some way, shape, or form. And I have seen these dudes, like, I'm getting married. Like, what? And they meet these fucked up women that have daddy issues, have been ran through, you know, all of the bad words that we use today, they existed back then. And I always heard the same fucking thing. When you try to tell them, like, hey, man, you know, she's been a raging fucking whore, blah, 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 you know, and you look, they look you right at the face, right in your face, and they go, I can fix her. Like, what? What are you fucking talking about here? Like, that vagina is whipped up egg salad, man. Like, there's no coming back from that. I could fix her. She's a good person. I love her. And every single fucking time. Every time. There's a divorce. She cheated on him. You know, it was so fucking common. You know, because back in the day, if you had like one of your dudes get married, you had to counsel them and they had to talk to the chaplain. They had to take two or three different fucking pre-marriage, you know, classes. You had to make sure that happened. And in the corner, the upper right corner of the counseling statement, I would literally open the yellow pages and write down that at least three numbers of divorce attorneys in the fucking corner. And probably half a dozen times I'd have these guys look at me and go, what are these numbers for? I'm like, those are numbers for the divorce attorney you're going to need in 6 months to 2 years. And they're like, oh, they thought I was fucking around. Now, one guy, his name escapes me because it's so fucking common. We'd go get him on post housing. There was some kind of fucking domestic dispute. And this is before, like, you know, the domestic violence fucking laws were fucking in full swing like they are today. And if it was on post housing, it was like the SPs or the MPs, because there was an Air Force base, McCord was attached, or not attached, but it was next door. And they would call, they look up like, oh, this guy's, yeah, okay. They'd call the unit, like, hey, man, we got some domestic shit going on. You might want to run some people down here and unfuck this whole thing because we don't want to get involved. And if we do, it's going to get ugly, blah, blah, blah. I roll down there, pick this dude up. You know, he's all puffy-eyed, doing the Hummel woof woof. It's like, like, it's very unflattering. You don't do that. All right. Men should not cry like that in front of dudes that they don't know. You know, and some people are like, oh, you're a callous bastard. I'm like, yeah, I am. Yeah, it's in combat, man. What do you want from me? I got when the time calls, I have those shark eyes, man. I don't fuck around. And we bring him back to the barracks. And I walk to the desk and I pull out the Kalski statement. I mean, here you go. Like, what's this for? Well, those three numbers in the corner, you want to call those in the morning. Oh, and we're going to fill out your allotment paperwork so you can pay for said attorney. You know, and then, you know, we'd get him in the barracks, feed him fucking booze until he cries and punches holes in the walls. And then we're like, okay, he's good. And then we handle it from there. But, you know, even back then, it was just such a clusterfuck. It was so ugly, man. And I just can't believe dudes are still getting married. Wow. And it all started with, I can fix her. And I'm going to be honest here, gentlemen. You don't come here for me to lie to you. When it was my turn to get married, I did the exact same fucking shit. What a fucking moron I am. Redhead, green eyes, thin waist, big ass titties. I was a fucking moron. There were so many red flags. It could have been a fucking Chinese communist fucking parade. And I didn't see them because I was a fucking moron. I literally went down into the forest, found the whore tree, shook it, and expected a wife to fall out. Like, what in the fuck was I thinking? Oh, that's right. I was dick thinking. Every fucking time. So when men make mistakes nowadays, you know, I don't really get on them too hard. I'm just like, look, man, you know what? You know the deal. All right, we're going to get you through this. And at some point, I promise you, when you're out of it, you're going to look back over your shoulder at the clusterfuck and the craziness that just happened. And you're going to have to laugh because it is just that fucking crazy. Calliope, Pop, what were the red flags? She was in a fraternity or a sorority. Sorry. Sorority. So there you go. She was a fucking emergency room nurse. Like, of all of the professions women have, that is the biggest fucking cheating whore fucking position there is. And I fucking ignored it. I heard some of the rumors of some shit that happened with her in the past. And I went right back to the, well, you know, maybe she's serious. You know, I used to kill people. You know, how bad can it fucking be? It could be fucking bad. Okay. And it almost cost me my life. I came this fucking close. Like, I had the plans. I picked the location, the firearm, the method, everything. I had it timed. And the only reason I am still here is the universe just did swapped another man for me. And this man and I talked for half a fucking day. I think it was a Thursday or a Friday. I knew this guy. I was his platoon sergeant for like a year and a half-ish. And the following Monday or Tuesday, he literally self-deleted in the exact same location, wearing the exact same uniform with the exact same caliber of weapon. Like, what are the odds of that? I mean, I know now why that happened. The universe swapped me out for that dude. And then, you know, once I ran his funeral and I saw how fucked up and everything, I came out of the valley of death and I looked over my shoulder and I saw millions upon millions of dudes lost in the fucking sauce. Hopeless. Helpless. I could have said, yeah, it sucks to be you. Pulled the pin on the grenade, threw it over my shoulder so none of that shit followed me, and got on with my life. I could have been that guy. But I'm not. And I never have been. I turned my ass right back around, walked right back in the Valley of Death, and I've been pulling men out of there ever since. There you go. And if I didn't get fucked over and I didn't do all that stupid bullshit, 606 men would be dead right now. And, well, four women are in there. Sorry. So it would be like 602 men and four women would be dead. By their own hand. You know, so there's something going on here. I mean, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a head shrink. I'm not a counselor. I'm not that guy. I'm an infantry fucking grunt, and somehow I've pulled 600 people out of the Valley of Death with logic, reason, truth, and comedy. There's something going on here. Just is what it is. Let's see what we got here. Sorority sister. Yeah. Let's see. Just came to mind. I need to attach a link on the bill of Purple Hearts final beat. Oh, okay. You know what? Flip the Bunny, send an email to me, and I will forward it to Battle Dwarf because he's really good at that legalese stuff. He'll read the bill, and then he can word it so it you know, fits in, and then you can present it. And listen, I'm truly honored you're doing that. Okay, the next one here is called, and I did a video on this, you know, life is nothing but a bunch of circles and they repeat until you learn. Rinse and repeat. Okay. We've all done it. We've all done something. You thought you would get one result and you didn't. And then you go right back to the fucking beginning. And you do the same fucking thing, and you still expect a different result. Like, what the fuck? And people do this all the time. Like, they make these mistakes when they pick their jobs. Maybe you're just like, I need the money, but you don't really like it. And then, you know, you just punish yourself. It fucking sucks. And at some point, you're like, I need to get out of here. And you quit. And then you're like, hey, I need a fucking job. You look for another job and you don't like it, but yeah, I need the money. And it literally goes around and a fucking round and a fucking round. People do this with wives. I can't be alone. I need to get married. I need companionship, blah, blah, blah. They ignore the red flags like I did. And then boom, one divorce, two divorces, three divorces, and so on. And so on and so on until they're fucking in the grave and they don't have a penny to their name. Now, in my fucking case, I learned. I am never getting married again. I am not inviting the state into my relationship ever fucking again. It's not happening. All right. As it stands right now, I'm a monk. I am not dating. I am not pursuing. I'm done. As far as I'm concerned, I'm fucking done. You know, I'm cooked and booked. But there's guys out there that just keep making the same fucking mistakes over and over and over again. Like, we had a guy in the unit who used to race stock cars. And he would finish in the top six-ish in a lot of these bigger races. At least in locally in the Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, Ohio circuit. And he knew what he was doing and why he couldn't, like, you know, unfuck himself, but he just kept making the same mistakes. The same fucking mistakes. You know? I mean, I remember doing when I used to compete as a kickboxer. I fought the same fucking way. I was a pressure fighter, always coming forward, always fucking throwing. I would take two punches to deliver one. And didn't work out. I should have been able to learn different styles, to adjust to different fighters. And I was too fucking pig-headed to do it. I didn't learn. So please, if you're watching this and shit is fucking up in your life, just take a snapshot of what's fucking up and then analyze the steps that you took to get here. And if these steps led you to this result, when you do it again, change those fucking steps. The path will be different. The destination will be different. Learn from the mistakes. It is the wise man who learns from the mistakes of others, and the fool who learns from his own. Let's see what we got here. Rule Man Life. The demons and angels want souls, and Pop is here to prevent that from... Yeah, well, I'm trying. Alrighty. Alright, Flip the Bunny. I'll get a hold of Battle Dwarf and have him look at it and see what he can do. It'll probably take him a day or two to get to it. Let's see what we got on MGTOW. We've got some... somebody put some nice pictures in there. That's good. Little peepers. Let's see. Yeah, it's sad that some men need to experience the lessons to learn it, unfortunately. Yes, I know. We should play that dong to save a life. The artist lived in Japan being discriminated against because he was white. Lighthouse, maybe. Pop, we are building up for the most epic war of ages. Ooh. We'll see. Pop is on a mission from God. This isn't the Blues Brothers, man. This is a real deal. This is a game for all the marbles. You know, I'm trying to remember the writer, but... He came up with a nice phrase that is fucking true. And I'm going to paraphrase. Maybe I'm saying it wrong. But he said, you know, those who have hunted armed men long enough and learned to like it will seldom, if ever, love anything else. I think it was Ernest Hemingway who wrote that. And for the most part, he's absolutely fucking true. There's like nothing that compares to that. Nothing. The only thing that comes close, and my other thing else, and the only joy I get left in life is every time I get to put a number on that board. We have another one. We're going to read it into the record like this week, maybe. Because it's the ultimate game of death. Like I literally ride into the valley of death, armed with nothing but logic, reason, truth, and comedy. And I'm pulling men out of there. All right. I'm rambling. Let's get on with this. You can fix her. Life is a bunch of circles. Totally true. All right. We covered that. Underestimation. Oh, that was a hard lesson. All right. Now, this one. I learned on the civilian side. When I got off active duty in 91, I immediately went to the Q course. I was there for about 7 months. So technically, I was done with the Army stuff in active duty in 1992. And I started kickboxing. I did a couple of amateur fights, and then I started getting paid for it. And I was in college. Money is needed when you're in college. And I stayed busy. Like, I fought every 3 to 8 weeks for almost a decade. You know, and, you know, I worked as a repo man, process server, professional fighter, went to college. You know, then I started working in finance. I was still fighting. And when I was 28-ish, I got invited to fight up in Canada. Now, I'd fought in Canada before at very small shows, but this was a bigger one. And I was fighting for a North American belt, the FFKA. I think they're defunct now, they're gone, but you know. And it was pretty much, you know, full contact kickboxing was pretty much dead by then, but you know, what are you gonna do? And it was a 10-round fight, and the guy's name was, last name I believe was Reed. Don't remember his first name. Fought him in Canada, lost on decision. Okay, was a solid fighter, good basics, but now I knew the pattern. And I remember after the fight, he was like, "Yeah, it's everything." You know, the guy was a total gentleman. There was no animosity. We're professionals. And I looked at him. I said, "Don't get used to that belt. I'm coming for that. I'm taking it." And then I got another. I think he defended it 2 times, and then I got the call again to fight him a second time. And I think it was the 8th round. I knocked his ass out cold. Boom! It was a butterfly kick. I threw a roundhouse to with my right, and then jumped in the air, and then came over the top with a left roundhouse right on the jaw, knocked him out, and they almost called an ambulance. And I think that was his last fight. And since I took that title, I got invited to fight the light heavyweight world champion of the FFKA. And I think it was that year or the following year when I got that fight. I don't know, the years all blend together. And you know, he was 10 years older than me. I think I was 28 when this happened. You know, and I was in tip-top shape. I was ripping apart people in the, you know, sparring in the ring. I used to go down to the Kronk and just box those guys. And every time I showed up, it was kill the white guy day. And I'm like, I'm gonna fuck this dude, old man, up. I am going to fuck him up. He doesn't stand a chance. I totally underestimated this guy. I watched his fight tapes. I knew his fucking tricks. And that is not how it went. Somewhere in the 2nd round, he threw a rear leg roundhouse. And you normally I would catch those on the forearm or the elbow. I missed this one, and it came right under the elbow and shattered my ribs. I could not torque, I could not twist to generate significant amounts of power after that, so on. And it fucking hurt like fuck. Unbelievably painful. And he kept kicking it. And then, I mean, that was just absolute agony. Agony, agony, oof. And in the 10th round, you know, I got cut in somewhere in the 9th round over the left eye. And then he kept working on the cut. And it just, in the 10th round, the doctor stopped the fight. Now, to be honest, I would have stood there and just taken an absolute fucking beating and lost on decision. You know, that's probably what would have happened. And I would have preferred it that way, but that's not how it went. And I lost. Man, you know, it is what it is, you know. But, you know, I started off from nothing. You know, paid for martial art classes with paper out money. You know, returning bottles, mowing grass, couldn't afford to test for any belts, and didn't really matter because, you know, I took some belts off of people in the ring. That's the ultimate test. And I fought my way up to a shot at a world title. And I was pretty crushed by that for a while. I was pretty upset. But in every loss, there is a win. You just have to look for it. All right, there's always the bright side, the silver lining. And the lesson I took away from that fight, and this allowed me to save the lives of my men in Iraq in 04, just a few years later, was the lesson of underestimating. I have never done that again, ever, for anything. Every fucking mission where my men went out, I always planned for the worst fucking case scenario. I had artillery on standby. I had Apaches alerted. I had, armored units in the area on alert. I had their frequencies. I had it all lined up. I took no fucking chances. And if I didn't have to send my men out, I didn't. And it made all the fucking difference. So, yes, it sucked that I lost that fucking fight. And not a day goes by where I don't think about that. But I've accepted the fact that it just wasn't meant to be. Because sometimes that's just how shit goes. The universe puts you in a position to learn a fucking lesson. Once you learn the lesson, then you move on to something else. Because I know if I had won that fight, I would have kept fighting. And at those levels, that's serious damage. Serious damage. Like when I was fighting, a club fighting, four, five, six round fights, you got, dinged up a little bit, but most of the opponents, they weren't at that level. Once I got to the top tier and I started fighting like, really good dudes, I knew every time I stepped in that ring, I'm going to be healing for 3 to 4 weeks. I'm probably going to need stitches. And if I'd have won that world title, I know how I am. I would have sought more. And I would have probably kept fighting until I was really, really fucked up, much worse than the TBI I took when I got blown up. So there you go. All right, let's see. I've been using some. Okay. So he's saying and chat and GPT might come handy for the Jericho files. Yeah, I mean, I do have that talk to text stuff, but I don't know if I'm gonna let AI write books for me, man. It seems soulless, not my thing. Let's see. Imagine worst case scenario, like huge stress off in case the worst does happen. At least it doesn't blindside you. Correct. Yeah. So I mean that was a pretty good lesson. Again, I was present in the moment. Yes, I was fucking bummed out in the beginning. But you just have to accept the fact that that's the way the fucking cookie crumbled. You didn't win the coin toss, and you walked off the field. Yes, you were defeated. But you learned something. So really, was it really a defeat? Yes and no. No and yes. I don't know. So that's the underestimation. Okay. Now this next story, I'm going to try to get this one some national attention because it needs to happen. And this next one, I call it, I always bet on the underdog. Because listen, I have been the underdog for pretty much my entire life. I've been the misfit, the banished, the second look not taken, the resume put at the bottom of the pile. Okay, I've been that guy my entire life. All right. So this story starts in the late 90s. I moved over to the company F-425 Long Range Reconnaissance Airborne, right out of 12th Group Special Forces. I was a team leader for a while, LRSS team leader. And then I get called in to the commander's office. They're like, hey, we want you to be acting platoon sergeant for selection, training and selection platoon. No problem. Knock that out. Then they're like, okay, you're going to be, we're going to send you to ANOC so we can promote you. Because I was an E6 at the time. I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem. I go to ANOC, knock that out. I get put as the platoon sergeant for 1st Platoon, which we had the other NCOs that I'd worked with. I had sent all of the good guys when I was the selection and training platoon sergeant to 1st Platoon. 1st Platoon had 110% strength. Everyone was a fucking go-getter, hard-charging son of a bitch. And I was their platoon sergeant for maybe 3 months. Got a new commander. And one day out of the blue, they don't even fucking tell me. And I thought this was the biggest curse at the time, but it turned out to be the biggest blessing. And I'm going to explain it here. This one always chokes me up. This is a good one here. Out of the blue, I'm standing there. We have a company formation. I'm standing there. And the new company commander, he'd been there like 3 or 4 months, just watching how shit fucking, because this is how good commanders, they don't just show up and change shit. They see what's going on and then they adjust. And he just like, he gets up and he's fucking yelling. He's fucking pissed. And next thing I know, he's like, we're changing shit. This is fucked up, blah, blah, blah. And he looks at me, he goes, Pop, you're no longer 1st Platoon Sergeant. Fall in on 3rd Platoon. 3rd Platoon had 4 fuckers in it. It was a team. It wasn't a fucking platoon. 3rd Platoon Sergeant was a fucking asshole and ran all these dudes out. And I was furious. Furious. And the platoon sergeant that took my place used to be an officer, and he didn't fucking make the education requirements, or he didn't suck enough dick. I don't know, but they reduced him to E7, and before I know it, he's fucking sitting on the prime platoon. And I literally wanted to beat his fucking ass, and I would have kicked his ass if he wasn't a cop. I would have beat him down. I was that mad. So now I'm standing in front of 4 guys, and I'm pretty pissed. So I don't clear this with anybody. I don't talk to the company commander. I didn't even have a lieutenant. It was just me. Like, the platoon sergeant ran the lieutenant off. I walk to the 1st platoon, and I pick my old team guys. They were all on my team, and I'm like, 3rd platoon right now. And they were instant squad lead, or team leaders. Then I went to headquarters and I got the names of all of the people that had come to the unit and left for whatever reasons. And a lot of them quit, were broken mentally, physically, spiritually. Now, spiritually broken people are incredibly hard to fix. But once you fix them, they will never break again. I'm just going to put that out there. And I started tracking motherfuckers down. And these guys are out of the fucking system. Like, they're civilians now. They're ETS'd, done. Most of them. Some of them are still in other units. And I tracked these guys down. I remember tracking a couple guys down at their fucking gym. Picking up their kids from school. I walked up, knocked on the window, gave them my sales pitch. Went to their fucking work. I literally walked into, the Ford plant here? Yeah. I think maybe it was GM, I don't remember. But I talked to the security guy. They're like, yeah, cool. I was, in uniform. Like, and I talked to one of my guys. Yeah, sure, sure. Yeah. Show me ID, blah, blah, blah. Guy's like working the fucking line. I'm just waiting for his break. He gets off break. He's in the break room. I walk in, give him the sales pitch. Within a year-ish, year, a little over a year, I had 36 guys, actually, you know, 42 guys. All of them underdogs. All of them broken. Every single one of them. You know, they were the misfits, the broken, the underdogs. Nobody wanted them. Broken, fucked up. I mean, it was Pop's dirty triple dozen. And I named that platoon the Kings of the Fucking Damned. Because that's what they were. Now, I didn't train them, because you train monkeys and dogs. I forged them into something better. I unbroke them. And they were absolute fucking savages. Like, trying to get them to pass a fucking inspection was like pulling teeth from a shark with blood in the water. Just wasn't going to fucking happen. But these were triple volunteers. Volunteered for the Army, volunteer for Airborne, volunteer for Ranger duties. And that's how it went. And they never missed a hard time. They never missed an objective. We had 100% commo. In the field, doing what they're supposed to do, they were fucking flawless. Absolutely flawless. Totally proud of them. And, you know, guys came and went, you know, and I recruited more people. Two of them were Marines. And the Marines have a habit of when you get out of the Marine Corps, they fucking put this stupid code on your discharge paperwork, which makes you next to impossible to be reenlisted into another branch. But this was the Michigan National Guard. I knew fucking people. I had a couple colonels in my pocket. I'd call them on the phone, fucking tell them the info, get a memo, take it to recruiter, boom, fuck the code. You're in the Michigan Guard now. Boom, you're in 3rd Platoon. And those guys were fucking animals. One of which I lost to active duty. He wanted to go to the Ranger Regiment. I could not say no. And I literally met that guy 3 times a week at 5 in the fucking morning. And we walked 8 to 12 miles every fucking time to get him ready. He went on to do active duty and do great things. So the time comes for me to get promoted to Master Sergeant. This, you know, I get promoted to E8, you know, whatever schools. I don't remember if there was any schools for that or not. I don't think there was. Knocked that out. And before you know it, we get alerted to go to Iraq. Now, I'd only been out of 3rd Platoon for like 4 months before we, you know, went to Iraq. So these guys were still my platoon. Like, I forged them from, they're just a bunch of misfits. Underdogs, what have you. And they wound up doing all kinds of crazy shit, put up with insane hours. I mean, just the fucking abuse that they took was monumental. Monumental. And then April of 2004, the whole Fallujah thing, the first Fallujah was kicking off. They just hung up a bunch of former Navy SEALs from a bridge. People were getting, convoys were getting ambushed, civilian convoys, what have you. They were just getting slaughtered, you know, and they blew up the road. We were getting mortared. We're getting all these crazy intel reports that they're going to storm the walls. There's, you know, hundreds of these guys. The Mahdi was the Mahdi Army Brigade or whatever. However they organized their shit, it was the Mahdi Army or some crazy-ass brigade. And, you know, we're taking shit serious. Like, they were firing Kadush rockets into the fucking base. Fucking, it was fucking crazy. April 4th, we had 4 Marines from Charlie 5-1 get whacked, like, literally within a mile of the front gate. And I heard that, you know, the Marines were going to pull a mission, and they were our QRF. So we didn't have a QRF, no quick reaction force. So on the 4th, I remember I walked right into 3rd Platoon's area. I didn't even talk to the platoon sergeant, who was a yes man faggot, in my opinion, of course. And I'm like, all right, let's go. QRF. Nobody fucking hesitated. Everyone on their feet. Everyone had weapons. Boom. We're at the front gate waiting. And to my shame, our battalion would not release us to assist these Marines while they were getting attacked and fucked up like a mile down the fucking road, just right down there. And we watched as they limped in with their 4 dead Marines, 2 of which probably could have survived if we got there in time and got them back to the combat fucking hospital we had on post. And that will fuck with me for the rest of my motherfucking life. I am ashamed that I could not help those guys. Ashamed. All right. And between the 4th and the 9th, like, there was just convoy after convoy getting attacked. Whole civilian convoy set on fire, like butchered bodies on the side of the road. This is like Mad Max level fucking shit. And on April 9th, they attacked another convoy, and Staff Sergeant Mulpin was captured. And then he was raped, tortured, and they sawed his fucking head off, from the reports that I saw. Could be wrong. Don't know. I hope his family doesn't hear that. But that was the MO of these guys. These guys, there's no rules. These guys are just fucking as evil can get. And for whatever reason, our battalion commander on the 10th rolls out a convoy which has members of 3rd Platoon as security. And they get lit up. Now, we're not talking onesie, twosies, a couple shots here and there, because that happened on the regular. We're talking an organized, complicated ambush, raining RPGs, machine guns, the whole fucking deal. And luckily, they made it to victory. No casualties. Black on ammo. One of those guys on that, who was manning a Mark 19 from the Humvee. Now, this is early on. There's no up armor. At best, some of our Humvees had that quarter-inch fucking Haji chicken plate armor. There's no chicken plate for, you know, for the gun. There's nothing up there but just the base. You put the gun on, and then it's just you. You're free-balling, man. And this motherfucker, while driving 60 miles an hour, fired and reloaded, was it 4 or 5 boxes of Mark 19 ammo, ran the vehicle black on Mark 19 ammo. Once he was out of that, he rotated and fucking was tearing shit up with a saw. I put him in for, I believe we put him in for a Silver Star. We'll talk about that at the end. All right. I was in the battalion. I heard all this shit going down on the radio, and I'm like, oh, fuck. So I leave the talk. I walk across post to my room, pull out my satellite phone. I had my own personal satellite phone. It was Iridium. Go up to the roof because it had spotty reception. Call the Green Beanies on Victory. Let them know what's going on. Because some of these guys I went to the Q course with, they knew me. Yeah, you're right. Flip the bunny. It is a Pintle, not a Mountain. And then I made some other phone calls, went down to the talk, you know, we called the black talk, the 425 talk. We called the victory and got them more ammo. And then our battalion commander, again, in his wisdom, now we just had a convoy just get lit up. This was a big fucking attack. They made it through no casualties, none. He could have said, just fucking stay there. We're gonna, you know, call in some more assets to unfuck this thing and clear the area. He could have done that, but he didn't because he was a fucking intel battalion commander. He didn't know any better. He's a fucking idiot. I hate that guy. Well, I shouldn't say hate because that hate means I want him to die. I severely dislike him, and I would jap slap him on the golf course if I ever saw him. I'd probably spit in his face. That might be too harsh, but it'd be close to that. I have no respect for this man. So he says, you guys are going to go down there and escort them back at 3 o'clock. I'm like, okay. And I'm trying to tell him, I'm like, yeah, no, why are we doing that? You know, we don't need to do this. This doesn't need to happen. And he's like, what the fuck? He just wouldn't stop. He's like, this is a simple escort mission. And I'm like, this is not an escort mission. This is a movement to fucking contact. This is the worst fucking mission an infantry fucking unit can draw. We are driving into a fucking enemy force. All right, fuck it. I'm the battalion commander. That's what I want. Okay, we'll make it happen. I talked to my company commander. I'm like, we need to pull the Mark 19s out of the towers. We need to have Mark 19 ammo, Mark 19s on this convoy. This is a fucking movement to contact. This is not an escort mission. And he wouldn't budge. He's like, oh, the battalion commander wants them in the towers. We're not taking them out. I'm like, fuck that guy. You're a National Guard officer. This is active duty. They don't give a fuck about you. This is our lives here. And he wouldn't fucking budge. So I'm like, okay. All right, sure. Now, I'm an E8, triple tabbed, combat jump star, CIB. I walk my ass across post, talk to the 372nd MB battalion, beg, borrow, and steal. Actually, beg and borrow. Two Mark 19s complete. Sign the hand receipts and everything. Borrow a vehicle. Got harshly yelled at, which is cool. I don't care. I've been yelled at before. Then I drive over to Charlie 5-1, talk to their first sergeant. And I say, look, I'm sending my guys out in Indian country and I need fucking, you know, unissued, unfucked with Mark 19 ammo. Can you help me out? He little looks at me. He goes, Gunny, give this man whatever the fuck he wants. And I rolled out of there. I think I had 12 or 16 cans of Mark 19 ammo, half a dozen AT-4s, thousands of rounds of 308 and 223 belted ammunition. Those guys took care of me. And my guys are gearing up. They're lining up, getting ready to do this. And I remember I come rolling up and I'm like, all right, put these on the vehicles. My commander freaks out. He thinks I took him out of the tower. And I'm like, what are you fucking going on about, sir? Here's the hand receipt. These are not, they're still in the fucking tower. So he's like, oh, okay. And dudes were so terrified. So terrified that when I rolled up those Mark 19s, they were crying. They're like, thank God. Thank God. And we loaded up. Now these are the kings of the damned. This is a platoon of fucking misfits that I assembled and forged. We had some guys from headquarters and some guys from first platoon, but there's maybe a platoon and a half of guys total. And we rolled out the gate. We roll by the burning hulks that were once fuel trucks. You know, there was fucking butchered bodies, you know, at least half a dozen of them. Now, this is 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Normally, there's nobody out. It's fucking hot as fuck. This is Iraq. But there's all these people out there They look like they're working in the fields. I knew what was up. I knew this is a fucking, this is gonna go down, man. And we drive all the way to Victory. Nothing happens. Not a fucking peep. We're on the radio. Our convoy from the morning rolls up, links up with us. We turn around and almost immediately they start shooting. There were so many tracers in the fucking air. It was like insects. Unbelievable. Windows are shattering. On my door, I had the quarter inch fucking chicken plate fucking Haji armor. I could hear the fucking rounds dinging off of it. You know, a couple bullets were bouncing around in the cab. And I remember I'm looking out the window and I see fucking tracers go right through the window of one Humvee and come out the other one. Like, I'm like, somebody's dead. I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, somebody just died. Fuck. You know, it's on. And we didn't panic. We didn't like put the pedal to the metal and just fucking go balls out. We went at a fairly decent clip. But it was very calm and bizarre. And the kings of the demand of the damned went to work. This was a target-rich environment. There was people standing out in the fucking open, standing in doorways and in windows shooting at us. It was like shooting fish in a fucking barrel. It was so stupid. Now, I'm not a spray and pray kind of guy. I went through maybe 57 rounds of ammunition, firing two, sometimes three rounds per target as we drove by. The Mark 19s were going crazy. All right. 40 some odd minutes later, we roll back into Abu Ghraib. One guy, shot in the wrist. And the bullet that hit him was actually fragments because it went through the quarter inch piece of steel and he got hit with the spall at him in the wrist and his arm. That's it. He got stitches, a tetanus shot, and then put on like light duty for like 2 weeks. All right. So we make it back. Nobody's dead. It was a fucking miracle. A fucking miracle. I have no idea how that fucking happened. Every vehicle was shot to fucking pieces. Windows shot out. Guys were sitting behind their fucking cruiser of weapons. There's no cover, nothing. There's just this little 3.5-inch fucking metal pipe that you put the weapon on top of the Humvee. And there were some of them that had 5 or 6 bullet holes right where that piece of metal was. And they were untouched. It was divine intervention. It had to have been. There's no other excuse for it. So I make some calls. I talk to some people. And they sent out some civil affairs teams to inquire into what happened. It took about 3 days. 3 days. We got the numbers. Somewhere between 70 and 120 enemy killed in action, with 2 to 3 times that number wounded. So a platoon and a half, the kings of the damned, rolled out into enemy fire and zeroed out the entire brigade of the Mahdi army, which was on its way to reinforce the fighters in Fallujah. They didn't make it. And those fuckers that killed Maupin, they didn't make it either. Fuck those guys. And we wrote up a bunch of awards. We're talking some high-level shit. And it didn't go anywhere. The battalion commander fucking shit-canned him. Or when we did get him, when they kicked him back, they were grading him like English fucking papers. You know, you need a comma here, semicolon. Like, what the fuck is this shit? Like, you read the regulation for awards, written in black ink, legible. You don't even have to necessarily write it on the fucking form. I mean, there have been Medal of Honor awards written up on sea rat fucking cardboard. And I found out why. Because then they would have to explain. The 202 MI Battalion and the 503rd Military Brigade would have to explain why they sent a platoon and a half of guys out into Indian country, outnumbered 15 to 1, with no air support, no armor support, no indirect fire support, and nobody even there to come to our rescue if the worst case scenario, we were going to fucking get raped, murdered, and tortured, and decapitated. They didn't want to answer those questions. So fuck those Michigan National Guard guys. So that's what we're talking about here. I always bet the underdogs. And on that day, paid off in spades. Because you bet on the underdog, yeah, more than likely, it's probably not going to work out. But when it does, it pays off in fucking spades, baby. Spades. I'm going to make sure those motherfuckers are famous because they fucking deserve it. All righty. Getting worked up here. Let me check some of these fucking comments. Hopefully I'm not talking too much. Hope you guys like these stories. Let's see. Ooh. There we go. Nice picture, Mr. Harrison 94. I love the story about how he'd get the Red Wings. Yeah. That's another thing. After that big fucking firefight and all that shit happened, all of our Humvees had the Red Wing logo painted on them. And within 20 miles of Abu Ghraib, nobody ever fucked with us again. Ever. They knew it was up. I don't know. Maybe they got stupid thinking it was going to be a fucking cakewalk ambush because they had ambushed fucking countless convoys. You know, for like a week and a half until they ran into us. We fucking put them in the dirt. Let's see. It's not your guilt, Pop. It's your unit commander's shame, not yours. If I remember your story, you called for bombardment aiding. Yeah, I tried to do everything. Couldn't get anything done. I wish I had coordinated with them prior, because I swear to God, if I had direct commo with those Marines, I would have rolled anyway. I wouldn't give a fuck what the battalion commander said. I would have pulled the coming in, broken, out, Roger, we'll call you when we're done, and then just roll out there and do what we got to do. But that didn't happen. I'm so angry at that guy. And, I'm a pretty tame individual as a civilian. You know, I've done some crazy shit, but I'm going to be honest. If I ever have to go to war again, I will do exactly what I've done. Because when I was there in country, I did everything in my power. I used every tool at my disposal, every fiber of my black dead heart, an ounce of my midnight fucking black soul to put those motherfuckers that were trying to kill me and mine in the fucking dirt. I played fast and loose with the rules. I disobeyed fucking orders. I ignored orders. I was more than willing, and I got yelled at almost every fucking day. Did I care? No. No, no. What's an ass chewing compared to putting a dude in a body bag? There's no comparison. That's just the way it goes. Broken Pine, Abu Ghraib stories are the tits. Thanks, man. Glad you guys like them. Let's see what we got here. So you just heard from Edmund on Pumble. He said thanks for thinking about him. He'll try to catch you on Tuesday or Thursday. Okay. Susie McCarley, the fat electrician, needs to hear that story. Yeah. Let's see. Kill people, get awards and fame. Save people, get kicked like a can and seen as lame. Yep, that's fucking the way it is. Like, if I was a tier one operator and I dropped the hammer on 600 fucking motherfuckers, I'd have a book deal and a movie deal. That's how fucked up the world is. Let's see. Rule Man Life, they have to thank you, Pop, for your training and perseverance and why nobody got hurt except the guys in the wrist. Well done. Yeah, I just met him a few weeks ago. I was up here meeting one of the fans who's a truck driver whose name escapes me. I'm bad with names. And I was walking in and he was standing right there waiting for a table. And I'm like, hey, man, fuck yeah. And he's doing good. He's a granddad now. Everything's right with the world. And here's another story. And this has to do with called keeping your word. So we got the order that we were deploying to Iraq. And, you know, everyone was shitting Tiffany cufflinks. And it was fucking people going crazy. And, you know, we're trying to plus up our equipment, which was all shit. The Michigan National Guard squandered billions of dollars given to them by the federal government. That's another story. And we